Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. When Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of King Herod, behold, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem, saying, "Where is the newborn King of the Jews? We saw his star at its rising and have come to do him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was greatly troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Assembling all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They said to him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it has been written through the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, since from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod called the Magi secretly and ascertained from them the time of the star's appearance. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search diligently for the child. When you have found him, bring me word that I too may go and do him homage." After their audience with the king, they set out, and behold, the star that they had seen at its rising preceded them until it came and stopped over the place where the child was. They were overjoyed at seeing the star, and on entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother. They prostrated themselves and did him homage. Then they opened their treasures and offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed for their country by another way. The Gospel of the Lord. Excuse me. Well, today we are celebrating this beautiful feast of the Epiphany, this manifestation of God's glory in our midst. Tomorrow, the baptism of the Lord, that is also a continuation of the Epiphany, the revelation of this incredible phenomenon that over the years we have come to call Christianity, the Incarnation. That our Creator becomes one of us, and in fulfillment of the ancient prophecies centuries before, and something that is so portentous, so important, that even people who were not Jews and who it would seem to us didn't have a horse in this race, they're affected by this. So we have these, you know, we've called them the three kings, we've called them the three wise men. Magi is something, is a position, a magus, a magician. It doesn't exist anymore. These men would have been astrologers, not in the current sense, you know, not people who say, oh, you know, if you're a Libra or you're a Virgo, then this and that's going to happen to you. No, not like that. They would be more like precursors to today's astronomers, but they didn't have the scientific method that we now enjoy. That's what these men would have been. They would have been employed by kings, by potentates, in order to share their knowledge through the king and the high-ranking people of a given society. These guys, we don't know where they came from. They came from the east. One of them, I think it's Balthazar, we typically depict as an African. And it's a good thing that we do, because the point is that these people are not Jews, that they're Gentiles. And so they represent the rest of humanity, whether they be, you know, Asiatic peoples or African peoples, European peoples. They represent the rest of humanity, and the learned of humanity who come to pay homage. Now this story, you know, it's pretty, and we see it on Christmas cards, and we have all these carols that we've written about it, you know. We three kings from Orient are, etc. And That leads our enemies, which we have always had, we have, and we always will have, to criticize us and say, oh yeah, you know, you believe in these fairy tales about, you know, the three kings and the star and blah, blah, blah. You know, like, that's just what we have to deal with. You know, the people who ridicule us and mock us, you know, the people who've created this fake god, the flying spaghetti monster, because for them, for us to believe in God is just as valid and as smart as believing in, you know, I don't know, Tinkerbell or in this case, the flying spaghetti monster, some ridiculous idea in an invisible higher power. Because, of course, everything is stuff that we can see, and, you know, everything is the solutions to everything are here, patently here on Earth. Of course, a person with wisdom, not necessarily with learning, but a person with wisdom, understands that there is a lot more than meets the eye in anything in this world. We cannot even unravel the mystery of our own self, let alone the mystery of the universe and what it holds for us. We believe in the creator of all things visible and invisible. You know, today, as best as we can, we have science, the daughter of Holy Mother Church, by the way, and we have the current paradigm is the Big Bang Theory, which was put forth by a Catholic priest, by the way, Father George Lemaitre. So we have great learned men over the centuries, Isaac Newton, St. Augustine, St. Thomas Aquinas, who believed in God. So to believe in God is not the province of the stupid. It is the province of the wise. And so we have this story today, and there was, speaking of science and astronomy, there was a phenomenon, a celestial phenomenon that took place. We don't know exactly if it was, when it was. It would have been probably, according to our current calendar, which is supposedly based on the birth of Jesus Christ. But hey, let's give the guy who created it a break. He was a monk, I forget his name, but he lived in the Middle Ages, you know, no electricity, anything, you know, working at candlelight. So, you know, he was off by 5 or 6 years in his calculation of when Jesus would have been born. Hey, that's fantastic. 5 or 6 years, it's a lot better job than I would have done if I had tried to calculate when Jesus was born. So we do know, and modern astronomy has demonstrated that there was an unusual aligning of Venus and Jupiter, I believe it was, that would have created a star of sorts, also under the influence of Regulus. Regulus, by the way, means little king in Latin. And that would have happened around the time of the birth of Jesus, and would have happened over, would have been visible from the sky in the Middle East, in what was then called by the Romans Judea, today what we call the state of Israel. So there was a star, there was an unusual phenomenon visible to the naked eye in the skies, a moving phenomenon, and something that these wise men would have been expecting in their knowledge of celestial phenomena, something that they would have expected, but also it combines with it being a sign of something very important, something of great portent happening in Judea, and in particular in the, as we say in the carol, the little town of Bethlehem. Something very important. So that is what they come to see. Herod doesn't know, couldn't care less. Herod is an ethnic Jew, doesn't really, probably didn't even believe in God, certainly was not a man of the Torah. He was a collaborator with the foreign occupiers, with Rome. He had a throne that he paid for, and that was in the Romans' best interest. So it was a great deal for the Romans. Okay, we receive money from this guy, and we call him the king, but he serves Caesar. So, and it was a good deal for him because he really didn't have any responsibilities. He was not responsible for the protection of the people. That was the Romans' responsibility and interest. It was their land. So he was able to reap all the benefits of being a king without all the hassles. And so he feels very threatened when these foreigners show up to his court, coming from really far away and talking about the birth of a king. It's like, wait a minute, no. I'm the king of the Jews. What are you talking about? So he's threatened, especially when there's talk about celestial phenomena and stuff. He feels, no, I cannot let this happen. Oh, please tell me where the child is so that I can go and worship him too. And we know what he did. He orders, since they did not go back, they did not see him again, in his paranoia, he orders the slaughter of all the boys 2 years and younger in that entire area. And the thing is, why do these different books, these different men who wrote these books, inspired by the Holy Spirit, why do they tell us these things? Are they just like pretty stories, or in some cases really ugly stories? You know, with a lot of violence, as we see in the Old Testament. Why do they tell us these things? Like, just so we can read stories to children so they can go to sleep at night? And some stories that we would never read to our kids because they would have nightmares. Why? You know, is the point of this story to tell us that these three wise men, whom tradition identifies as Melchior, Caspar, and Balthazar, that they were really smart and really with it, and that Herod was a jerk? I mean, is that the point? No. The point is, something is happening. God is manifesting himself. What was hidden is becoming manifest in the entire world. The light of Christ, as we see in the beginning of John's Gospel, is working its way into the darkness of the world. And the world doesn't like it. It's like when we're asleep and someone turns on a light and we're like, get away from me, turn that thing off. That was the reaction of the world. And every human heart, which is created in the image and likeness of immortal God, the creator of everything, and fallen and corrupted by sin, every human heart is a microcosm of the world. Microcosm in Greek, a miniature cosmos, a miniature world. That is what the human heart is. And that is why we play so much, we stock on the human heart. We have, for example, here in the Roman Church, we have the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, the heart of God made flesh, and something that we are called to give a return of love to, so that our hearts can be made like the heart of God, the heart of the Creator, the heart of He who is, the heart of love itself. We're very much like Herod. Of course, none of us, I hope, would order the slaughter of baby boys. But all of us have that darkness that can push us, under the right circumstances, to do unspeakable things. You know that song by the Rolling Stones, Sympathy for the Devil, where he talks about that he speaks in the person of the devil, and he identifies himself as a man of wealth and taste. And he says, I shouted out, who killed the Kennedys, when after all, it was you and me. Because all of us have that seed of evil inside us, and all of us have a preference to like things that are evil. Because, and I mentioned that song, Sympathy for the Devil, it's part of pop culture, and it's probably the most accurate description of Satan that exists out there in the world. Satan is not a red imp with a pitchfork and horns. Satan is not someone who's going to frighten us. Satan is a fallen angel, and he's not a man, but he is, as Mick Jagger says, of wealth and taste. He appeals to our higher nature. He doesn't walk into the room and all of a sudden the room smells of sulfur. No, he says to us, oh, look, you know, you're so smart and sophisticated, so much better than those ignorant people who go to Mass every Sunday, those stupid people who believe in the flying spaghetti monster. Come on, please, you're smarter than that. He did that to Eve in the creation story in Genesis, and he does it to every one of us. Even those of us who are baptized, especially those of us who are baptized, and more so to those of us who are making an effort and who go to Mass on Sunday. That is the entrance of the light of God into the world, into our human heart, and the rejection that says, ah, turn off that light, go away. I don't want it. I want things to be the way I want them to be and what I'm accustomed to. Leave me alone and don't tell me what to do. I'm smart. I know how to live my life. Thank you very much. That is our reaction. You know, that's why we have the sacrament of reconciliation. Because all of us, even when we love Jesus and even when we try to live by him, there's a part of us constantly pushes us to sin. St. Paul talks about it. Says, I have a thorn in my side. And, you know, and I keep doing the things that I don't want to do, and I don't do the things that I do want to do. That is the human condition. So when we see people like Herod, when we see people like Jezebel, you know, all the bad people of Scripture, that's us. And when we see even the horrible, violent images that we see in the Old Testament, that is the reality that we don't see, that the outside world laughs at because they can't see it. But around every human heart, there is a battle, there is warfare going on, spiritual warfare between what we call angels and demons. Angels, messengers that were faithful to God, and demons, those angels and messengers that rebelled against him and divorced themselves completely from love, from light, from anything good, and seek to take us down with them. It may sound quaint and funny to the outside world, but this is the spiritual battle, and this is what we have to deal with all the time. Someone telling me, oh, please, you know, you're an intelligent and sophisticated person, and really should turn away from those stupid, silly fairy tales that the church is teaching you about. Well, the stupid, silly church has been around for 2,000 years. Who else has? And has it been around because we're so smart? Ha! No, because we have the protection of Jesus Christ. And Jesus has made us aware of the spiritual reality, of the spiritual combat that we live in. And so may that light, that manifestation, that epiphany of God, that star that the wise men followed, may that same star, that same light, may it shine upon that microcosm, that heart that we have. And may Jesus, the baby Jesus, give us the humility to understand and to accept that there are shadows in our heart. Shadows that we like, and shadows that we don't really want to give away and let go of. And may he give us the strength and the courage to bring them to the confessional, to say, Jesus, I don't want this anymore. Please remove this thorn from my side, and please help me be like you. Help me be more loving. Help me be childlike, and help me reflect your light in this darkened world. God bless you all.